Welcome to SCOTUS Cast. Unconstitutional Conditions, Population Caps, and Prisoner Release Orders Edition. Thank you for tuning in. On November 30th, 2010, the Supreme Court heard oral argument in Schwarzenegger v. Plata. The central question in this case is whether a court order requiring California to reduce its prison population in order to remedy unconstitutional conditions in its correctional facilities violates the Prison Litigation Reform Act. To discuss the case, we have Sarah Hart, who is a deputy district attorney in Philadelphia. Ms. Hart is on an amicus brief in support of the appellants. As always, the Federalist Society takes no position on particular legal or public policy issues. All expressions of opinion are those of the speaker. And now, Ms. Hart.
Good afternoon. This is Sarah Hart from the Philadelphia District Attorney's Office. I've been asked by the Federalist Society to provide some comments about the Schwarzenegger versus Plata case that's been argued in the U.S. Supreme Court at the end of November. I will start off with a little bit of a caveat in that I co-authored one of the amicus briefs filed on behalf of 18 states in support of the California position. The Schwarzenegger versus Plata case, which I'll refer to as Plata, is one of the most significant prison cases to reach the Supreme Court in years. Why is it significant? Well, in April of 1996, Congress passed two landmark laws that really had significant impact on litigation by prisoners. One was the Anti-Terrorism and Effective Death Penalty Act, known as AEDPA, and the other was the Prison Litigation Reform Act, known as the PLRA. Virtually every term, the Supreme Court addresses some aspect of AEDPA. Plata is the most significant PLRA case to come before the Supreme Court. By a little way of background about the PLRA, Congress passed the PLRA to address two specific issues. First, it sought to address the massive number of meritless lawsuits filed by prisoners that were swamping the federal dockets. And it adopted a series of requirements that sought to limit those cases. Supreme Court has had several cases on that aspect of the PLRA. A second major goal of the PLRA was to restrict unnecessary federal court orders, especially consent decrees, that were micromanaging state and local corrections institutions. Congress provided that basic injunction limitations should be applied to consent decrees, established a mechanism for terminating old consent decrees that were no longer necessary to remedy constitutional violations. So, for example, injunctive relief or consent decrees now must be necessary to actually correct a constitutional violation, must be narrowly drawn, and the least intrusive remedy. And in making this assessment, a federal court must give substantial weight to any adverse impact that the order might have on public safety. These are generally referred to as the need narrowness, least intrusiveness, and public safety requirements that apply to any prison orders that federal courts issue. Congress, however, set up additional requirements for prisoner release orders, any kind of order that would require the release of prisoners or preclude a prison from admitting a prisoner. The prisoner release order has all of the other limits that apply to injunctive relief, but there are new additional limitations that apply to prisoner release orders because Congress essentially found that prisoner release orders were federal court orders that had the potential to really impact public safety. There is now a requirement, for example, that before a federal prisoner release order can be entered, there must be an order for less intrusive relief and the defendant must have been given the opportunity to reasonably comply with that order. The court also has to find that crowding is the primary cause of the constitutional violation, and that no other remedy other than a prisoner release order will address that constitutional violation. There are specific intervention provisions that allow prosecutors and legislators to intervene to challenge a prisoner release order. Most importantly, in this case, a prisoner release order may only be entered by a three-judge panel, and an appeal from the entry of a prisoner release order goes directly to the United States Supreme Court. The appeal just argued before the United States Supreme Court in the Plata case involves a three-judge panel prisoner release order involving tens of thousands of California prisoners. This is the first case before before the Supreme Court that directly addresses the substantive limits of a prisoner release order. I'd like to give you a little bit of background to the Plata case. Plata is actually two cases. It's Plata and Coleman. And the two cases have a very long and tortured procedural history. The Plata case, which I'll call the medical case, is a class action that was filed in 2001. It alleged constitutional and ADA violations in the delivery of medical care to California state prisoners and resulted in a consent decree for an injunctive relief. After finding that the state failed to comply with agreements and after expert reports noted serious deficiencies in the delivery of medical services, the federal court appointed a receiver in 2006. While the receiver made substantial changes in the medical system, the court has now found, the individual judge court, found that crowding in the prisons was preventing the delivery of constitutional medical services to the plaintiff class. The Coleman case, which is also before the Supreme Court, which I will call the mental health case, is a class action filed in 1990 on behalf of prisoners with serious mental disorders. In 1994, following a trial, the federal court found Eighth Amendment violations because of delays in access to medical services, and the court also required the state to develop remedial plans under the supervision of a special master. In 2006, the special master issued reports finding that the state had made progress, but concluded that class members still were not receiving adequate mental health care. Plaintiffs in both the medical and mental health case then filed motions in the separate courts claiming that the increase in the state prison population was interfering with the delivery of medical and mental health services and requested orders limiting the California prison population. On the same day, both judges separately issued opinions requesting the appointment of a three-judge panel. In August of 2009, three-judge panel consisting of Judges Henderson, Carlton, along with the third judge, Judge Reinhart, issued a sweeping 187-page opinion directing the state to reduce the prison population to 137% of the design capacity of the prison system. Design capacity is usually refers to what a prison was originally built to hold, how many prisoners it was meant to hold. And it by limiting it to 137% of design capacity, in effect, they're saying that the state can't exceed any more than what the original designs were meant to build. While there's some disagreement about the exact impact of this order, it appears that it requires California to release between 35,000 and 45,000 prisoners within the next 2 years. In issuing this order, the three-judge panel relied on numerous corrections experts who testified about the effect of the prison population on overall prison resources and the ability of California to deliver medical and mental health services. In addition, the three-judge panel found that the early release of prisoners to achieve this population reduction would not adversely affect public safety. On appeal, California raises a number of issues to the Supreme Court. While it raises jurisdictional issues relating to the convening of the three-judge panel, California's arguments essentially boil down to a claim that the PLRA strict prisoner release order requirements were not met in this case. The state claims, for example, that the PLRA required that the state be given a, quote, reasonable time, end quote, to remedy the alleged violations before the three-judge panel could be convened. The state has also claimed that even if the three-judge panel was properly convened, it should not have entered a prisoner release order in these cases. Specifically, it has argued to the Supreme Court that a prisoner release order can only be entered by a three-judge court where there is clear and convincing evidence of a current constitutional violation. The state has challenged the panel's refusal to allow California to defend the case by showing that the current conditions in the prisons are constitutional. California is basically challenging the panel's refusal to use a clear and convincing standard and the failure to engage in de novo fact-finding. Instead, the panel relied on the prior findings, which California now claims are outdated. And California also complains that the panel unnecessarily deferred to the standards of professionals about what an ideal medical or correctional system should be rather than the standards of the Eighth Amendment, which were really designed to look at basic deprivations of human needs. The state also challenges the finding that crowding was the primary cause of the alleged deprivations relating to medical and mental health care. Lastly, California challenges the fact that the prisoner releases apply to a vast number of prisoners who are not members of either class actions. They are not prisoners with serious mental health needs or medical needs. And it has also vigorously challenged the panel's finding that the release of anywhere from 35,000 to 45,000 prisoners would not harm public safety in any way. Notably, in this case, there are a significant number of interveners, as the Prison Litigation Reform Act grants intervention rights in prisoner release order cases to prosecutors and legislatures. In addition to the briefs filed by the interveners, there has been an amicus brief from 18 state attorneys general that focus very heavily on the public safety consequences of prisoner release orders. The appellees, in addition to challenging, contesting some jurisdictional questions, in essence are taking the view that this long, long history of remedial orders and findings relating to past current conditions, in addition to the recent hearing with professional experts, was more than enough to establish the standards of the PLRA. They basically take the position that if it's not this case, there will never be a case that meets the standards of the PLRA, citing to the very dramatic increases in the prison population in the prison, the fact that there have been orders after orders that have not been complied with, and that there have been significant prior findings of constitutional violations. The oral argument in this case was extremely complicated, and there was extended time given. Carter Phillips argued for California, and Donald Spector argued for the prisoners. It was a lively argument where Chief Justice Roberts many times had to jump in and control it a bit. But it seems that the court here was not at all concerned with any of the jurisdictional arguments about the creation of the three-judge panel and seemed to want to just get to the merits of the case. As predicted by most court watchers, the case appears to be breaking down along traditional conservative and liberal lines, with Justice Kennedy appearing to be the key vote in the case. And the argument went like this. Justice Ginsburg basically took issue with the state's argument that the release order was premature. She cited to the fact there have been 20 years of findings and remedial orders, especially in the Coleman case. Justice Sotomayor challenged the state's assertion that the prisoner release order was not the least intrusive remedy, stating that given California's fiscal crisis, there appeared to be no other remedy that would address the issues. Justice Alito, in a surprisingly spirited tone, was extremely concerned about the public safety implications of a massive prisoner release order. He elicited from the prisoner's lawyer a concession that up to 70% of California prisoners recidivated, and he also questioned the nexus between the release order and the plaintiff's claims, since the prisoner release order will apply to prisoners who are not members of either class. Chief Justice Roberts and Justice Scalia also questioned the three-judge panel's approach. Justice Thomas, as usual, did not ask any questions during the argument, although most court watchers predict what he will vote to reverse. Justice Kennedy asked a series of questions during the argument and appeared to accept the fact that a constitutional violation had been established and that prison overcrowding was the primary cause of the constitutional violation. He also seemed to believe that a prisoner release order was not necessarily premature given the history of the case. However, from several questions, he seemed troubled by the exact timing of the order and the extent of the release order. He suggested that the decision that the system should be capped to a limit of 137.5% of design capacity was not the least intrusive relief to cure the problem. He cited to other witnesses who had talked about a 145% capacity, which would result in far fewer releases. He also questioned whether the three-judge panel had properly considered whether a limitation of 145% would be sufficient to remedy the problem. The Chief Justice and Justice Alito similarly questioned the 137.5% figure. In addition, Justice Kennedy and Justice Sotomayor questioned the amount of time the state had been provided to reach the population limit, asking whether giving the state 5 years to meet this goal rather than 2 years to meet the goal was more consistent with the PLRA. Justice Kagan also focused on the five-year limit, drawing a concession from the state that it could meet the population limit within 5 years without an adverse public safety impact. So how is this likely to shake out? It appears, based on the argument, that there are sufficient votes for a remand. And if there is a remand, it's likely to be with some direction relating to the remedy. For example, whether the population limit chosen was actually the minimum reduction necessary. And it may also focus on the time for implementing the order. This would be a middle ground and certainly not the big victory that California is hoping for. But even if this happens, it is certainly not the final word on whether California will be required to implement a massive prisoner release order. This case, in many ways, is the byproduct of other rulings from the Ninth Circuit relating to the Prison Litigation Reform Act. In other circuits, prison systems have been able to extract themselves completely or greatly limit other longstanding injunction orders by using the Prison Litigation Reform Act termination provisions. These longstanding institutional cases in other circuits are really different from what we're seeing in California, where California is bound by a Ninth Circuit ruling that greatly restricts the PLRA termination provisions. If California does not have a more complete win out of the Supreme Court in the Plata case, it's extremely likely that they will mount a full-on assault to the Ninth Circuit decisions as a way of starting to limit the remedial orders in Plata and Coleman.
Thank you for listening to this episode of SCOTUS Cast. For more episodes of SCOTUS Cast, as well as audio and video of past Federalist Society events, please visit our website at www.federalistsociety.org/multimedia.